Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Welcome to this edition of the podcast series, The Curious Advantage, where we meet people who have researched all aspects of curiosity. Today, we're talking with Dr. Diane Hamilton, who's an author, researcher, speaker, and radio show host. And we're talking with Diane about, in particular, the relationship between curiosity and confidence. I'm Garrick Jones, here with one of my co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Diane, great to speak with you. Really great to have you on this edition of the podcast. Can you tell us about yourself? What's you've been researching? What surprised you?
Well, thank you for having me on. It's really nice to be here, Garrick and Paul. Have been researching curiosity for the last several years, actually. My background is in behavioral business issues. I wrote my doctoral dissertation on emotional intelligence, which kind of got me interested in the assessment, became certified in, you know, giving emotional intelligence tests, learned more about some of the DISCs and Myers-Briggs and some of the assessments that organizations were doing for behavioral issues. So I worked with a lot of teams, and that had really led to a lot of the things that I did as the MBA program chair at the Forbes School of Business here in the United States to, you know, improve our curriculum and do a lot of things in education. But when I left that and I started to, as you have a show, I have a radio show, and I interviewed a lot of people who had been really super successful in their field. And everybody I talked to was super curious. And my students didn't seem to embrace that same level of curiosity at times. They kind of wanted me to just tell them how to do it without trying to figure it out. So that's kind of how I've got interested in exploring curiosity. And so that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years. I've done a lot of research to determine what kept people from being curious, because I what I really thought was fascinating was there's a lot of research out there that'll tell you if you're curious or not, but then what if you're not? So I wanted to fix that. So that's kind of the backstory.
Why don't we start with what stops people from being curious?
That was really interesting to me, because when I started writing my book, I thought, well, I want to tell them how to fix it, but how am I going to tell them to fix it unless I figure out what stops it? So I did a lot of surveying to, you know, determine the types of things that kept people from being curious. And it took years of formalizing the questionnaires to get the right questions to determine these factors. But I really found that there's four factors that really keep people from being curious. And the acronym FATE, F-A-T-E, is what I came up with. And it stands for fear, assumptions, or basically the voice in your head, whatever you're telling yourself, technology, and our environment, which is just about every single person you've ever come in contact with in your life.
So maybe take us through each one of these.
Well, you know, I really expected fear. That wasn't much of a surprise. And actually, when I first started researching this, I put a link in, you know, a thread on LinkedIn to ask people, you know, what keeps you from being curious? And a lot of them had fear-based things. No one wants to look stupid. Nobody wants to seem unprepared. You know, there's so many aspects to fear. It's just, think about how many times you're in a meeting and you're thinking, wow, I want to ask this question, but I'm probably the only one and I'm going to look stupid. So, you know, you lean next to Bob and you say, hey, Bob, why don't you ask the question? You know, nobody wants to let him look stupid, right? But it a lot of people were telling me fear-based issues, because we all have them. But there, it goes beyond fear. It goes to assumptions as well, which is really the voice in our head. This isn't going to be worth my time. If I do it, they're just going to give me more work. If it's just too much trouble, you know, all the things that we tell ourselves of, you know, I studied that when I was young, I didn't like it. It can overwhelm us with the past in a way. And then if you look at technology, technology can either be over or under utilization of it. I mean, if we ask our device for to answer things. It doesn't really give us foundation sometimes. But a lot of people can fear technology. So some of these things can kind of overlap. The environment is basically the everybody you've ever known in terms of from your parents to your teachers to your peers, your colleagues, anybody, whoever had an influence on you. Think of when you were a kid in school and they couldn't answer your questions because they had 35 other kids, or to your boss who maybe told you, you know, don't come to me with problems unless you have solutions, to, you know, social media, if you posted something where they think that's not cool, so you took it down because you didn't get enough likes, or whatever it is. There's so many things that can impact whether we go to the next level to explore.
I'm fascinated, of course, fear, assumptions, technology, environment. Is environment, what you're saying is, I can only go as far as what I've experienced in the past or what I've been connected with in the past, people I've met. Yes, I need to overcome my fear. Yes, I need to overcome my assumptions. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Yes, I need to become au fait with the technology that's present. But environment, I'm really interested in how that inhibits our being curious.
What it is not saying that you can only go so far. It's just a recognition of how much it's impacted you. For example, if your family was like, you only should be a doctor, or, you know, everybody should take over the family business, or there's certain things that have led you down a certain path. And by recognizing that, and then you recognize, this is why I didn't explore this, and maybe I should explore this, because this is why I didn't. These are giving you answers, you know, this is why. Now you can create an action plan to move forward.
We came across some research looking at kids who managed to get into some of the top universities. If you come from a middle class, upper middle class family who are connected and au fait with business and so on, you're more likely to go to university because you have the connections, you have more people who've been there ahead of you. But if you don't, perhaps you come from a working class family or from a family that haven't necessarily gone to university, there's a good chance that you won't go there because you don't know how to. You don't know the steps necessary, the simple steps necessary to get in, for example. That's just one reason why people may not be curious about going to university. Is that one side of what you're talking about?
Right. There's an expectation. In my family, with my kids, I always had the expectation that they would go to university. It wouldn't be necessarily that they had to do anything that I thought that they should study, but I kind of always had it be the expectation, just like high school, you go to university. So it's something that a lot of people don't recognize has impacted them. I created the Curiosity Code Index. Mm. In organizations, they give this to employees, and it opens up this discussion that no one really has had with them before. As you know, in your research, curiosity ties back to so many factors in the business world. And if you can talk about these things in a private way where they don't have to share their results, but that they have their results, and then they can create these action plans and brainstorm in these groups that we create, this leads to these really, you know, self-discovery of, you know, wow, I could be, maybe I'm misaligned in this job. And maybe when technology takes over and this job's gone and they're realigning me to something, I could be, you know, so much more engaged and innovative and productive. And so that's why these are just such important conversations that have not been had until now.
What's your view on curiosity in organizations?
This is tied into, you know, if people feel engaged about their job, because a lot of them are not aligned properly. They're not doing things that they feel passionate about. You know, engagement is just a passion and a desire to do your job, to feel that this is what I really should be doing and I want to get to work. And a lot of people are just walking dead in the job.
It's true. It's so sad. That's not necessary.
Right. I'd like to share a story that explains why curiosity is so important. Think of baking a cake, okay? Let's say instead of, if you're baking a cake, you mix ingredients. You might have flour and eggs and oil or whatever it is. You mix together, you put it in the pan, you put it in the oven. What happens? Well, if you didn't turn on the oven, you get goo, you don't get cake, right? Nothing right. happens. Right. And okay, so when we go to the curiosity example, instead of cake, we're trying to create, you know, productivity is your cake, basically. So the ingredients that they're mixing, they're, you know, they want engagement, they want innovation, they want motivation and drive, and but nobody's turning on the oven. And the oven, the spark to everything is curiosity. So that's kind of what I think is so fascinating, that we hadn't gone back far enough in the process. And I've had all the experts on my show who are motivation experts, and everyone will agree that curiosity is the spark to motivation. And
is there a link between a curious culture or a culture of curiosity amongst everybody in an organization and the value and the productivity that's being driven, and ultimately I would say the profitability? And can we make that link? It's probably early days yet. Certainly we suspect there's a link, and we know that companies like Novartis, since they've been implementing a culture of curiosity, have started to see quite an amazing impact on value driven and results. Whether that's a one-to-one correlation, we're not sure, but there's certainly some indication there may be.
Well, right now I'm doing a research project with Novartis, and one of their employees is writing her doctoral dissertation on curiosity. So she is using my Curiosity Code Index.
Can't wait to see the results.
So they're going to use Kashtan's tool to measure levels, then give my Curiosity Code Index and go through that training program, and then later give Kashtan's again to see if there's a change. And by the end of the summer, I should have some of that data.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Diane, I wanted to come back to your factors that inhibit curiosity, the fear, assumptions, technology, environment. And a lot of these, it seems to me that these are around our own beliefs about ourselves and about what we think is possible, which in turn then relates to confidence. And one of the things that we've been exploring in our book is the relationship between confidence and curiosity. Do we need to be confident to be curious? Does our curiosity make us more confident? Have you looked into this in your research at all?
Well, you know, I did take a look. If you look at the fear, assumptions, technology, and environment factors, it was interesting to me to look at the men versus women. I looked at the data that I collected. I noticed that fear was less of an impact for men and more for women. Nothing was dramatically different, though, you know, on either aspect. For assumptions, though, what we tell ourselves, more of an impact for men than for women. And technology was kind of equal for both, which I thought was interesting.
That's so interesting. There's a gender divide, though. And then assumptions that men make more assumptions than women.
And environment was stronger for men as well.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This is just one study. I would like to see much more research in that. Yeah. I think, though, women, that the fear was more impactful for them. And I think that it's very challenging to know why. I mean, you'd have to do much more research to get much more data on this. But yes, I think confidence, women probably, you know, have less confidence in the business world just because we've been in a less of a power position. You know, we haven't had the time and the background like men have had.
Have you spoken to anybody in your research when they specifically addressed that, where you've spoken to someone and they've maybe talked about their fears or their beliefs and why they're not curious, and then what they did about that to start to unlock or to be more curious?
Well, when I do the training sessions, you know, I go to organizations and give the assessments, but I also train corporate trainers and HR professionals to be certified to give the Curiosity Code Index. So I've talked to different groups, talking in a very safe environment that they can be really honest. Sometimes we whiteboard like what everybody's feeling. And a lot of the biggest discoveries I find is that they hadn't thought about this stuff. They didn't realize how much it impacted them. I had a leader and he asked me to do something. And I said, you know, I've never had to do that. I'd be happy to do that. How do I do that? And he looked at me with such disgust and he said, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. That's what he said. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Why?
I use that as an example when we talk about fear in groups. Yeah. And you know, what does that do? That tells me what I just said was stupid. Don't say something like that again. Lie, pretend you don't, that you know things you don't know. Mm-hmm. When I give examples in the courses, when we talk to people about this, they go, oh yeah. And they bring up their example.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book, The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
Think about being prepared to be vulnerable in that, you know, can you be vulnerable in the workplace and all the machismo that kind of goes along with it. And all of this requirement to be not to be vulnerable is a thing that gets in the way of curiosity. The idea of curiosity for me is about going into new territories and going into new explorations of things that may make me feel uncomfortable or may challenge me in some way. And that requires a level of vulnerability, which, as you know, the old way of working didn't inspire at all.
That's about conforming and fitting in.
Yeah. Right?
That was more what you were expected to do as an employee, which is the opposite. You know, we looked at like organizations like Microsoft and how they've turned around over the past few years because they specifically addressed this culture of fear and being wrong and shift to being innovative and creative and constructive with each other's ideas. And that starts to unlock their curiosity.
Well, I want to touch on what you're saying there on the conforming and fitting in, because I give a lot of talks where I start off with a thought experiment you might have seen from the National Geographic, where a woman went into a doctor's office to get her eyes examined, but it really was a thought experiment to see how people conform to status quo thinking and fitting in with the group. And what they did was they filled the doctor's office with people who were actors. They weren't really patients, but she didn't know that. And when she's sitting there, this bell would ring or buzzer would go off every couple minutes, and everybody around her would just stand up and sit down without explanation.
Oh my God.
She looks around, and after the third time, she got up.
No.
And they thought, well, this is interesting. So, well, let's take everybody out of the room. So they called everybody back one at a time as if they were getting their eyes examined. And so she's left alone in the room. They ring the bell. She gets up and sits down.
Yeah.
So they thought, well, this is really interesting. Let's add some real patients to the room and see what they do. So they start adding people to the room. The bell goes off. She stands up and sits down. The patient next to her, he looks at her, he goes, why did you do that? She said, well, everybody else was doing it. I thought I was supposed to. So what do you think he does the next time the bell rings? And everybody does it with her eventually. And they found that this rule, this random rule, which meant nothing, now is the social norm. And everybody does it because they want to fit in. They, as you were saying, conforming, fitting in. And that's what we're getting. We're getting status quo thinking in the workplace because people are standing up and sitting down for a bell and they don't even know why they're doing it.
There was that amazing YouTube video. It reminds me of a guy showing how to start a movement. And it was one man starting to dance by himself on a hill full of people at a festival. And of course, two or three started, and then four, and eventually everybody did. So it's, that's a kind of correlation. But right. The thing it makes me think about, Diane, is coming back to the assumptions piece. Because for me, you know, as a man, I'm challenged by the fact that we men seem to be more susceptible to putting their assumptions into situation. And of course, I'm always challenged by some of the gender stereotypes I grew up with, and I'm trying to overcome those. But then, just part of living life. But if you go back to the assumptions, the thing that really makes me think about curiosity and assumptions is that relationship to new ideas and exploration of ideas that make me uncomfortable, in particular, critical bias, and in particular, unconscious bias. So what do I need to learn, or what do we need to be reflective of in order to ensure that when we are being curious, we're not taking down pathways that are just about our own pleasure or about reinforcing the things we want the world to be, or reinforcing things that we want to be true? How does that relate to the assumption work that you've been doing?
Well, you know, you bring up a lot of really interesting points, and it ties into my work in perception and, you know, reinforcing of ideas that we we've always been taught. I mean, your perception is your reality. And and if we can understand that Paul's perception is his reality and Gary's is his reality, mine, you know, and you're working with all these people, we're making these assumptions of what we think everything should be. But a lot of it is tied into emotional intelligence as well. And in my doctoral research, I looked into quite a bit with emotional intelligence, and I have interviewed, you know, Daniel Goleman on my show and great experts. And I think a lot of this ties into building empathy, which is a big part of emotional intelligence. And a lot of understanding is through asking questions and understanding things from other people's perspectives. And our assumptions really are those things we tell ourselves and we ruminate on over and over again. And sometimes it could be improved by just asking questions and learning other people's perspectives about things. Assumptions, if you think about it, the voice in your head, it's like, okay, if I'm holding a glass of water and I ask you, how heavy is this? You might tell me it's 4 ounces or 6 ounces or something like that. But really, it's not how heavy, it's based on how long I hold it, how heavy it'll be to me. And if I hold on to that water for 5 minutes, no big deal. After an hour, my arm starts to hurt. And by the end of the day, my arm feels paralyzed. And that's kind of how the assumptions are. If we hold on to an idea for just a few minutes, no big deal. But the longer we hold it, the more uncomfortable it might be for us to do something different. And then, you know, eventually we're paralyzed by these thoughts that, you know, could be something we've just created. So that's what I think is really important about assumptions, is to face them, to understand why am I telling myself this? And how could I replace that with some other more positive thinking?
Perhaps also it's about being connected to other people as well, because being curious and being somebody's out there innovating and doing something different can be isolating. But certainly what we found in some of our research is that by being connected to others and to be curious within a community, that helps you challenge your assumptions, helps you perhaps get over your fears, even exposes you to different environments and so on.
Right. That's the empathy piece, I think, can be built from that. Because when you're asking questions, you're able to see things from other people's perspectives. Because we were always taught to treat others as we'd like to be treated. But we know that that's probably not as good as treating others as they'd like to be treated. And once you start to look at things from the they instead of the we perspective, then you build that cultural quotient that everybody's worried about right now. And that ties into my work in perception, because perception is really a combination of IQ, EQ, cultural quotient, and curiosity quotient combined.
Mm. Right. And also, I suppose, the community that you put around you, you can link that to your assumptions, because our natural tendencies are perhaps to put the people around us who are like us and therefore don't challenge us and don't encourage us to think differently.
Right. And I think that we've seen that when I used to teach a lot of courses around like Myers-Briggs and some of those, when you put teams together where everybody's the same, you have a much less interesting product. If you give them a bunch of Legos, they build a house and everybody's on the same on the team, they're going to build you this really boring house. You get a team of people who are all different personality types, they build you a castle and a moat and, you know, cool things.
A curious culture is a game changer. What does curiosity mean for you? Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation.
One of the things that I value in my life is Paul has been my business partner for about 20 years now, a little bit more actually. Yeah. And you couldn't get two more different individuals on the planet, frankly. But he challenges me daily, and I hope I challenge him daily too.
Somehow it works.
Sometimes it's not easy. What are the things that you would suggest, you know, as we sort of wrap this up a little bit, but what are the things that you would suggest we need to pay attention to in order to be more curious as individuals, or to create the conditions for curiosity? And I like to go this way. It's like with my kids, what should I be trying to encourage to enable the kids to kind of
be more curious
in a safe way and take on the elements of curiosity that give them this advantage?
Well, you know, I'm sure you've read Carol Dweck's book. And, you know, if you tell kids that, oh, you worked really hard to do that, that was really great, you're encouraging them to work harder. If you tell them you're naturally good at something, they may not, you know, be as open and to exploration. So there's a lot of research from Carol Dweck's work that is great for that. I think modeling curiosity is such a huge aspect of parenting and leadership. Because a lot of leaders say they want their people to be curious and that they believe they encourage curiosity, but half the employees only agree with them. So we're not seeing a lot of leaders who feel that sense of comfort either. You know, everybody's afraid they're going to get discovered that they don't know as much as everybody thinks they know.
And Novartis are particularly focused on this with their culture of unbossed, right from the CEO through the organization, is that they really are encouraging their leaders to put aside the sort of traditional way of leading and managing their people, but to actually be the leaders they I don't know. You have the answer.
I kind of find that really difficult, I have to say, because I, you know, did all my learning and my academic work, and I guess I'm still an academic, but when I did my initial training and so on, that was kind of what we were taught to be. We were taught to be leaders who had the knowledge, who were, you know, leading from the front, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the internet, perhaps, is the thing that's caused everything to turn upside down. And there's, when I'm teaching, for example, at the LSE, I know that every single student who sits in front of me with a laptop has access to more information and facts than I could possibly have at the front of the room. So then it shifted my teaching to really become much more facilitative, I think. But we've had to become curious about how we want people to learn, and we've had to become curious about new ways of teaching and curious about our own lack of knowledge and stuff.
It's a shift.
Right? Yeah, it is a shift.
You mentioned Novartis, and they do a great job of rewarding exploration with their 100 hours that they would like for people to learn each year. And I just spoke at Verizon's doing a lot of very wonderful things as well. They're creating little micro learning videos that they incorporate throughout their, you know, you can watch them as an employee and get credit, kind of similar to what Novartis is doing. And they do it in a way that reaches people in the way they like it, in small, bite-sized pieces of content. For example, they did a little 5-minute video that people could watch in their training rooms or in different realms within the work. So it's a rewarding the exploration and bringing up ideas. They're also showcasing employees who demonstrate what we talk about in these videos. And I know Novartis does something similar, that they will have these little TED events that they're going to have two of this year. And I'm working with organizations who want to set up TEDx salons, which are kind of smaller version TEDx events that could be all curiosity based to emphasize, you know, what this importance of learning. And a lot of companies have, you know, what if days, why not days, why can't we days, how might we days, and different, you know, meetings like that where they explore different things. It's all really about, you know, we want to hire curious people, of course, but a lot of people are, you know, already there. So I would say definitely hire curious people if you can. What did they notice coming in? Have them close their eyes, ask them, what did you notice about this or that, to see how much they pay attention or how interested they are. How much do they research your company? How much did they look into the information they needed for that event? But once they're in there, you know, there's so much we can do to just discuss this kind of thing. What's holding you back is probably the most fundamental thing. And that's where my research tied in. And once you find that out, then you can move forward and create really measurable goals, you know, smart goals that are an action plan for each of these areas.
Diane, I mean, that's brilliant. What would be your advice to a leader of an organization or a company that wants to embark on a journey of being curious in their organization? And what would be your advice to individuals that, I mean, listen to this, feel, actually, yeah, I should be more curious. What should they do? What would be your advice to those individuals? And what would be your advice to leaders of organizations?
Well, both anyone can take the assessment, which kind of gets you started if you're interested in knowing more. All of that's at curiositycode.com. So a leader, individual, they don't have to be enrolled in any program or anything to find out what holds them back. There's great research out there. I mentioned Carol Dweck's work. You know, we all know Simon Sinek's work. We know all the popular books about, you know, this, the fundamentals behind this. But I really think that even if you didn't read my book or take my assessment or do anything that I've done, think of the things we talked about here today. Go through each of the fear, assumptions, technology, and environment. And I have like little notebooks that I give out when I'm in training. And some of the things I have them do right when they sit down is, for fear, list some of the things that keep you from asking questions in a meeting. You know, just write down things. Is it failure? Is it embarrassment? Is it loss of control? What kinds of things? Get specific and kind of come up with little ideas of what can you do the next time. And then if you're talking about environment, assumptions, let's go in order, I guess. What is making you disinterested or apathetic or finding something unnecessary? Just what keeps you from exploring new things? And if you're talking about technology, do you over or under utilize it? I mean, is it because it does it for you? It's just too much trouble. You've not been trained. Are you overwhelmed? And consider some of these things. And lastly, for environment, think of how your education, you know, teachers, family, friends, workers, peers, everybody, of what impact it's had on you exploring curiosity. And if you write those down, anytime you have an answer to some of these things, you know, then you can create an action plan. Well, here's what I'm going to do today to maybe overcome that.
Right. That's great. Thank you. So it's like can be used as a simple diagnostic for anybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Diane. We've been talking with Dr. Diane Hamilton about the curious advantage, and Diane's been encouraging us to be more curious and fundamentally to overcome what's holding us back. Thank you, Diane. It's been amazing, and we look forward to further your research and to having more conversations with you.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed being here. I'm really looking forward to your work. Please keep me updated.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. Subscribe to the podcast today. Follow hashtag Curious Advantage and join the conversation. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.